Okay, we can begin. Today is Sunday, November 23rd, 2014. It's Sunday evening here. It's a dreary Sunday evening. We're having a wet winter, which is good for the ground, but a little hard for humans. But on the other hand, we have to be thankful for Tein Talamot Levracha. It's a very sad Sunday. We've all suffered greatly this past week. And I want to dedicate this shiur today in memory of the four Karbanot. Of course, everyone knows that I know Rabbi Moshe Tversky. I remember when he was born, he was the Rebbe's first grandchild. And he combines within him the finest yichus possible. Mitzad echad, brisk. On the other side, Chernobyla, down to Tolna. It's a Hasidic dynasty that I can't say for sure, but 99% certain they have never had machloket. Unlike other dynasties that even today are busy in machloket, I did not elaborate. The Chernobyla dynasty, they live b'shalom, b'shalva, the Rebbeim sit together, and he inherited both traditions, and it just breaks the heart to be killed in davening. I remember when he was born, so we were learning Sanhedrin with the Rav, maybe a year or two after he was born. And the Rav said something that I've repeated to my grandchildren so many times. The Rav said, here, sit down right in front of me. The Rav said that we were talking about Eidut. I remember the Sig, I spoke with Rav Heschel Schechter. He remembered too. Brought us back to the mid-50s. So the Rav said, a grandfather loves a grandchild infinitely more than a grandchild loves a grandfather. And the Rav said, I feared Reb Chaim, but Reb Chaim loved me. And now that I have Moshe, my first Einikel, you can't believe the love I have for this little boy. And it just breaks the heart. The second person I have to state even closer to me was Rabbi Aya Kopinski. And here I have to tell you, I grew up in the Bronx. Ko ama Hashem zachati lacheset narayach lech teichacharai bamidba b'yeretz lo zarua. You fellas are growing up today when it's fashionable to be a Shema Mitzvah, to be Shema Shabbos, where some people are frim, some people are just monkeys putting on tefillin, as I've stated many times. But this is the reality today. Millions and millions of people claim their Shema Mitzvah. Baruch Hashem. I grew up in the Bronx. You could count in the hands of these two hands, I think, had more fingers than the young people who were Shema Shabbos in the Bronx. I lived on 180th in Washington, and around the corner from me, a minute walk, were the Kopinskis, who lived on 181st right off Washington. And this boy's grandparents and his grandfather and great uncle were the only Jews I knew in the Bronx who were Shomer Shabbos and worked, and were not butchers. My butchers either were Shomer Shabbos, I had to make believe they were, you follow me, know how to keep the business going. Chaim Polkak's parents were Shomer Shabbos. They had a jewelry store, and the Kopinskis were plumbers, and they were Shomer Shabbos. And the boy's father grew up with me, and it's this boy, exceptional. These are tzaddikim, tzaddikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls them the tzaddikim. My heart breaks. I also want to call attention Rabbi Kalman Levine and Rabbi Shmuel Goldberg. They tell me, I didn't know them personally, although when I look at the picture here of one of the Karbanot that I didn't know, I have a feeling I met him. This is Rabbi Goldberg I'm looking at, and just Tzaddikei Elyon. And I dedicate whatever Divrei Torah I say tonight in their memory, Hashem Yikam Damo. A Talmud of mine, who I've quoted many times, Jonathan Berger, who's a Bucky in Shas, sent me an email. Thank you for, I responded to, he made comments on last week's share, and I'll make myself clear in a minute, because I thought he didn't understand something I said, so I'll clarify it in 1 second. Dear Rav Rakefet Shlita, thank you for the response. I am so heartbroken from Monday's Chorban. In addition to the awesome tragedy and the fact that till just recently, we lived in Hanof, and my son used to learn in that base medrash. Reb Moshe Tversky, Hashem Yikam Damo, represented something special to me on a very personal level. As a Talmud in the yeshiva in the mid-1970s, he's referring to YU, though I was a batlan, I used to see Rav Moshe Nes Chavruta Yubil Lachem Tov Rav Chaim Ilson, in parentheses, also my student, Rav Chaim Ilson, learning every night in the main Beit Medrash till 2:30 a.m. It was a sight to behold, honest to goodness, Ritacha D'Oraita. Ritacha D'Oraita is the rabbinic expression for being involved in learning, you know, talking and learning, arguing and learning, exactly what the Gemara intended when it quoted the Pasuk regarding Lima Torah et Vahav Basufa, that this machloket when you learn Torah. Though I never conversed with him, that sight day in, day out has left such a strong impression on me. One of those elements that is so significant in one's formative chinuch, chaval avdi avdin, it said, our loss. God have mercy on us. I have some biographical material which I'll give out after class on Rabbi Tweske. I know his father, his mother. His sister's married to my student from this very kollel. Rabbi Jonathan Rosenblatt used to sit where you're sitting, 1980-81. He came in that morning when I was Menachem Mobile. He walked me back to the car and he spoke with my wife, my daughter. We go back a long way. In addition, of course, I know Meir Tweske, who may have been a Rebbe to some of the students here. So Hashem Yikom Damo. The only answer is more Aliyah, more people living here, sanctifying the land, B'lev V'Nefesh. Okay, now, in my humble opinion, yeah, I can't go into more detail because once you get involved in the Knesset and what went on today and the new law they're trying to pass, and are we a Jewish state, a democratic state, it will engage us endlessly. In Rakefet's opinion, we are both a Jewish state and a democratic state, but when democracy conflicts with Torah, Tashem Tamima, Torah has to win out 100%. What's also interesting about the Rav, and so many people ask me this over Shabbos, wherever I had to go Shabbos, I had to leave 15 additional minutes because Menachem, I knew I'd be jumped on by people I met. And so many people ask me, the Rav, so broad, so many worlds, and look at some of his grandchildren, totally Torah, nothing beyond Torah. You take Rabbi Moshe Tweske, good example. Rabbi Moshe Meiselman, who paid me protection money not to reveal to his students that he has a doctorate from MIT. We're good friends. We go back. I go back with Moshe. He has a doctorate. He's a genius. As someone mentioned to me, he met a professor from MIT. He mentioned the name Meiselman. The professor started to shake. He said it was the most brilliant student I ever taught. Yitzi Lichtenstein, Reb Aaron's son. So I say it's just the proof that my take on the Rav is correct. You know what I mean by that? People, I've given so many lectures on the Rav. Right now, I thank God people listen with one ear to me. At one time, they would want to shoot me. You're lying. You're telling her. Right here in the kollel, I had incidents. I had to bring tapes of the Rav. And then people did terrible things. They burned, one guy made a ceremony, burned his black hat and put on a kippah. My Rebbeim lied to me. I said, that doesn't make me happy. But the Rav was the Rav. He lived, Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. He lived in two worlds. He was a Ger, where Jews were different than Obama. V'toshav, on that level, we're citizens of the world and have the same problems that Obama and Netanyahu and Ruby Rivlin and Shimon Peres have. Anyone who will have a break, I have one grandson doing big research on cells. I tell him, you got to win a Nobel Prize. I said, the most important thing in life. What I say in class, I tell my grandchildren, the most important thing in life is a Rebbe. If we don't have good Rebbeim, we will not have Jews tomorrow. But if you're not cut out to be a Rebbe, and you have good head, a good the cup, then research, find the cure for cancer. Okay? So on that level, we're Toshavim. So, but when you ask, what was the Rav's Untesteshura, they don't know Yiddish, I gotta explain, Untesteshura, Hashura HaTachtona, the bottom line in the Rav was Brisk, was Torah. You understand, everything else came afterwards, Torah Umada. It wasn't like Rav Hirsch, Torah Im Derech Eretz, where there was total integration. And so you see the way the grandchildren turned out, it just proves my theory correct. They got from the Rav the basics. They didn't want to take beyond that. People from Hebrew U have interviewed me. A lady did a doctorate. I know her mother grew up in the Bronx, was widowed at Zuckerman. She was married to Big Yichus, Big Palmidich HaChomer, Rav Zuckerman of the Mekas HaRav Kratis, her brother-in-law. And her daughter just did a doc. She interviewed me. She dealt with Tamla Meitav Du, a woman, and is it better for a woman to remain single or to get married? Will she marry down just to be married? Tamla Meitav Du, being the Meitav Amolet. It has great halakhic implications. So she interviewed me. I saw the doctorate. I'm quoted. Other people are quoted. They never met the Rav. They never sat in front. They read some of his writings. God, the way they portrayed the Rav, Mamish, a big philosopher. And they happen to know a little Gemara too. All right. And finally, I just want to say to the Chatan who was present, you are a perfect example of Ger V'Toshav. You don't know what you did to me that night at the wedding. You're nothing but a hound dog. You know how many memories you brought back? I couldn't believe it. The first part of the wedding is Kulo, Kedusha, Vitara, Torah. Then afterwards they have all these songs out of the 50s, the 60s, and the people singing them are all with beards and prayers, and you are nothing but a hound dog. Do you know what it means? You are nothing but a hound. What does a hound dog mean? Hound dog. It has many meanings, but one of the meanings, you hound the celebrities, you hound the sister, Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley was a Shabbos guy, by the way. That's Yichus. And you are nothing but a hound dog that you love these people. So you see, you're living in two worlds too. Torah and Mada, general culture. Ger V'Toshav Anochi Imachem. You are a hound dog with Gedolei Torah. When you meet Gedolei Torah, your face lights up. You're happy. You're inspired. And when you hear Elvis Presley, you can appreciate him. You are nothing but a hound dog. Gentlemen, let's roll. That's in honor of the Chatan. Divrei Torah that only Rakefet will say. Take my word for it. Menachem, you didn't hear those Divrei Torah where you went to high school, I'm pretty sure. Maybe privately the Rebbeim let their hair down so they admitted they knew who Elvis Presley was. Find out if they knew that he loved challah, because when he turned the lights on in the shul in New Orleans, they used to give him challah afterwards and some kichel. Kichel we don't have in Israel, but that was indigenous with an American Shabbos, kichel.
European, I heard it sounded Beatles songs.
The Beatle, the Yellow Submarine, my daughter's taught me, one daughter taught me how to appreciate it. Now, we're dealing here with last week, the Munkat Shadov, and I want to say again that we're dealing here with the Erev, with Brooklyn, with Reb Moshe, and the Munkat Shadov, you got to give credit to a young man who took issue with Reb Moshe Feinstein. But one thing in his Kuntres that I quoted last week, I want to stress again, because it's going to come up time and again. I'm going to give you a major source today, and anyone of Hungarian origins, and Klein may be of Hungarian origins, actually. So anyone of Hungarian origins, absolutely, if they say, Menachem, that they're opposed to an Erev, and they hold like Reb Moshe, you have to arrest them and send them back to school for 49 years to learn what it means to be a Hungarian. But we'll get there.
Send them,
well, not to Munkács, it's more than Munkács. It's generally speaking, all of Hungary, as you'll see. But you see, the point was raised, and this is Chaim Soloveitchik's genius. The talk I gave at the OU Center, and then I found the Rav Menashe Klein, Menashe Akutin's tshuvat, I couldn't get over how he begins his tshuvat exactly the way I began my talk. Do you remember the way I began my talk, Yomo? I lifted up that sheet showing the matzah and showing the marah, and Rav Chaim Soloveitchik has a classic article where he actually, rupture and reconstruction, that with World War II, with the loss of the Litvische Welt and the Hasidische Welt, and the total disruption, and then a miracle happened. Yiddishkeit resuscitated itself, regenerated itself, but it's a whole new Yiddishkeit. Chaim Soloveitchik coined the word, I never knew that word before, the mimetic tradition. Until then, we just imitated our parents, our grandparents. We were raised in an environment that was seeped with Torah and Yirat Shemayim, osmosis. It came in. The Rav once said in class, I never learned Yoredeya formally with my father, but I learned it by osmosis. Just by being around him, I absorbed Yoredeya by osmosis. It was the Rav's term. Now, today, it's a new world. Our grandparents, many of us are Balei Tshuva. I would venture a guess that there aren't 2 million Jews in the world today who are Balei Tshuva. And this will come to in the Monday class. You have to give tremendous credit to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. As a matter of fact, I just called a dear friend of mine who survived Hitler. Let's spell it out. He was in a Wallenberg safe house in Budapest. And the last day of the war, the Germans, Yimach Shmam, lined up the Jews in the safe house and started shooting. Killed one, killed two. He was number four, number five. And at that moment, I believe it was the Russians came in and killed every German in sight. That's how he's alive. So he just celebrated. I told him, I have a birthday in a week and a half. You just celebrated your birthday. This is a Chabad birthday. So I'm talking with him in America. What do you mean a Chabad birthday? I said, how old are you? 77. And who are we? We're garnished. Zero. Humility. Claim. Nobody's. This is our 770 birthday. That's a Chabad birthday. So you have to give Chabad credit. You don't even start to appreciate. Lakewood today has outreach. I learned in Lakewood they maledicted Chabad Erev Uvoka. We'll talk about it. It's not for now. But we have Balei Tshuva. We lost continuity. And with the Balei Tshuva came the Frumkeit binge. In other words, you open up Art Scroll, and for two lines in the Shulchan Aruch, you find 200 pages what to do and what not to do, and if this and that, the other thing. These questions never came up. You looked at your father, you looked at your grandfather, you knew what to do, you knew what and what not to do. And the Frumkeit binge. And I give the Munkat Shurav credit. This is a young man at the time that he took on Reb Moshe. He's not so young today. But when you raise the issue that we're going to have a Erev, and men and women are going to mingle, the Munkat is saying, what are you out of your mind? And he sounds like Reb Kefet. The fact that men and women are created by God is a reality. As the Gemara says, I don't want to live in a world where there are no women. You understand? If there are no women, there are no men. There's no marriage. There are no kids. There's no future. I gave lectures on sex and marriage. I even got a gift, a wonderful a book written by a minister, which was very good. But Chazal had such insight. Chickens didn't lay eggs without sexual tension. Who the hell wants to get married? Who needs a wife? Who needs kids? Larry, what have you spent raising your kids? Hundreds of thousands of dollars, day school, camp, shmam. And the moon country is hysterical. It's forbidden to speak like this. Okay, then I showed you last week the book by Rubenstein. Did you look at it, Yitzchak? How did you find it? The pamphlet.
It's nice.
It's what's amazing is, again, the eruption, reconstruction. What is it? Less than 30 pages, he gives you more clarity than the books in a Reuven with hundreds and hundreds of pages today. You follow? But Yasha, Lanyan, and what I found most
interesting.
No, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. But I want to tell you, what I found most interesting in the book was the picture of the fences on either side of Queens Boulevard. By the way, he says in the book it's in Forest Hills. So I don't know if anyone will if anyone's listening from Queens, we're all curious to know where these boxes are that have the fences that in theory can be opened and pulled across Queens Boulevard. And secondly, I'd like to know, do they do it once a year or not? And that's a machlekes achronim. Ein habila ma'akevet. In other words, it has to be able, but you don't actually need the water to come. I'm talking halacha of mixing with the flour and the kabbonet and whatnot. And this goes right down the line with tefillah and chatzitza. In other words, So here, the interesting question, do they actually open it? I was told they open it for 2 minutes on New Year's Eve. They say at 12 midnight, there's almost no traffic. I don't know. I can't answer what I don't know, but I'm curious. Okay, now let's roll further. And here I'm going to give you some very, very basic sources, and you'll see why. If you're a Hungarian and you open your mouth against an Erev, your tongue should be pulled a little bit. I don't want to say pulled out, but you should know that you are sinning. Now, what I have in front of me is a little guide that came out called the Flatbush Erev. What they went through in Flatbush, I'll get to it. I'm going to show you a document that I may be the only one in the world that has this document. If I'm not the only one, there are only two of us. You'll see. Now, in this guide, Nebuch, they had this tremendous machloket, and they bring two sources that are irrefutable, that you have to do everything in your power to build an Erev. One source is from the Mordechai. Now, who is the Mordechai? We're dealing here with the Rishon. We're not dealing here with the Munkacha. We're not dealing here with the Mishnah Halakot. We're not dealing here with Reb Moshe. We're dealing with the Rishon. The Mordechai was a Talmud of the Rami Wittenberg. So you're right into the heart of Ashkenazic tradition. If you look in to Masechet Eruvin, the Mordechai, it's in back of the Vilna Shas, it's in back of the Gemara. I don't believe there's an edited edition of the Mordechai, okay? I don't believe. You guys live in a wonderful world, all the Rishonim we struggled on, you have edited editions today, the Rashba, the Ritba, the Ramban. You don't know how lucky you are. We grew up without edited editions. I don't believe there's an edited edition of the Mordechai. But if you look into the Mordechai Masechet Eruvin on Daf Samech Chet, he quotes the Gemara. And the Gemara made a statement. I don't want to go into the whole Gemara. I just want to take one line out of it. It's impossible that two great rabbis lived in this alleyway and didn't build an Erev. And the Mordechai says, from this we see the Tama Rabba Ika. The lo leitu lidei isura la afuke ulayule me batim la chatsegat. From this we see, the Mordechai says, you have to build an Erev. You have to be able to carry. You have to be able to go from chatser to chatser, from house to house on Shabbos. Now, let me touch upon a topic. Before I go any further, before I go into the Chatam Sofer, let me touch upon a topic that some of you may be able to do a doctorate on, and you can debate the topic endlessly. This is the latest Jewish action. I gave out a copy last week, and I have another copy which anyone can take after class. Latest Jewish action. Rupture and Reconstruction. This is Jewish action put out by the OU. This is not Agudat Yisrael. This is not Satma. This is not, Neturikata. It's not Vishnitz in Munsi. This is Jewish action. It has pictures of women in it, right? The Bamishpacha, Ami. Wow, don't paste my mouth up for even suggesting there should be a picture of Rebbetzin Kanyevsky in Ami. There are pictures here. Here's a woman getting an award. Okay. Then they have an article on Shemitah. You don't know what a storm this article has caused. People are shaking. Because in the article, at the end, they start talking about post-Shemitah. Enjoy. Labriot, as they say. Post-Shemitah. You know what they tell you? Next Sukkot, don't buy Israeli etrogim. Kedushat Shviyat, you can't export. Gentlemen, Rakepet is not the only one shaking. More than that, I saw a picture which was widely disseminated on the internet of three or four mashkichim for the Eda Charedit going to Jordan. Did you people see that picture? going to Jordan to check the produce. Menachem, do you know that those people in that picture were over all three or all four Anissa Dioraita? Can you tell me what Anissa Dioraita? Did you learn with the Rav in the 50s, Masechet Sanhedrin, dealing with the Chukot Techem Lo Teilechu? Mori Rebbe said explicitly, and by the way, I found this later when I started learning a lot beyond why you taught me, but learning on my own and trying to learn Kolat Torah Kula, where I haven't gotten anywhere, but at least I'm trying for 77 years. I found this in Rebbe Chil Yaakov in the Sri Deyesh. The same thought as the Rav. Rafi, look at the shirt you're wearing. Did your Zayda wear a shirt like that? Your Elder Zayda in Hungary? Who saw such colors? What are we talking about? Look at the shirt I'm wearing. What did Avram Avinu wear? What did Moshe Rabbeinu wear? How are we allowed to wear shirts like Obama wears shirts like this? B'chukotechem lo teilechu. So we discussed this with the Rav. Yitz, were you in the class yet? This is in Sanhedrin, maybe 57, 58. I don't think it was later. So Rebbe, we went into the whole sugya. So Rebbe said, I quote Rebbe now word by word. If it's something universal that everyone in the world does, there's no b'chukotechem, lo teilechu. This is clothes that human beings wear. You understand? I wear a shirt. This is Jewish, particularly. But he said, if it's something that's unique to one branch of goyim, or one type of religion, that is an Issa D'Oraita. And the example he gave was wearing a kfiyah. Am I pronouncing it right? That's what they called it, the kfiyah, the Arab hats. Menachem, what were those rabbis wearing? Long beards, peyas, black clothes. What was on their heads? Kfiyot. No, and you're going to be so mechandem for kashrut doing an Issa D'Oraita. But I want to tell you, it sickened me, that particular picture. And now I want to say publicly, you can be samach on the het hamechira 100%. Tell me, Alex, you have schnapps in your possession, Erev Pesach? Jews in Williamsburg have schnapps in their possession? I don't see them spilling it out. I had one Rebbe, Rebbe Yosef Weiss, used to go down to the Harlem River with a bottle or two of schnapps and spill it out. I don't see anyone else spilling it out. They're selling chametz. Tell me, chametz, what are we dealing with? And he said, you're right, all right, don't shoot me down and tell me if you're mevatel the chametz. And he said, they're up on it. Shvius, there's an entire group of Rishonim, all the chachmei fervans, that Shvius is not even a nisa the rabbanim b'zman hazeh. It's a minhag tov. At the most, it's a nisa the rabbanim other Rishonim. So what are we dealing with? So this leads us to the question of legal fiction. Legal fiction. I've been asked this question a million times. A kid growing up, he looks around and the kid... I spoke with the Rav, by the way, about... I told Rebbe, the Rav had a minig. It's a litvish minhag that they didn't sell chametz be'en. So I asked Rebbe, but what about liquor? He said, liquor's tarovet chametz, you can sell it, he said. But chametz ben, in Israel, you don't fool yourself. You have tremendous concerns, Osem, Tanuva, what they manufacture, Hadar, the cookies. There are hundreds of thousands of tons of chametz that sold for Pesach, and you're buying it a week later, you understand? But, all right. We have to face a very simple question. Are we Karaites, or do we believe in Torah Hashem Tamima and the tradition that goes with it? This is not legal fiction. Selling chametz is taking advantage of the halacha. There is a halacha that if you give your chametz to a guy, belay v'nefesh, there's no problem of bal yira or bal yimatzen. Shvius, which is a minhag, at the most of the Rabbanon, and there's the economy of an entire country involved, and there's pikuach nefesh involved in the full sense of the word, and to put on a kafiyah. Could you imagine these guys think the Jordanians, you can imagine how many Jordanian police they have surrounding these guys. The Jordanians are going to see Jews with burden payers and black clothes, and they're wearing a kafiyah. They're not going to shoot them. You understand what I'm saying? Who are you fooling? Who are you fooling? We finish it, Lilo. But when it comes, we have a tradition. We have Mechirat Chametz. I've given Sherman. Rav Zeben has a wonderful essay in Moadim B'Halacha on Mechirat Chametz. You can see the essay inside. I've written, I've published. I published my Pesachol Chan Inspector, Pesach Rakafet Aaron. Ooh, and I take a look in the Haredi press. I once saw someone throw Mahamudiyah on the floor and stomp on it. I have to tell you, I can't disagree with him. Anyone, someone on that mechiz and a bikiris and a marit, who came up with that? Who are we talking about, Het Mechiz? Rabbi Yitzchak Chan Inspector, Rabbi Yoshua Trunk, Rabbi Shmuel Mullival, who are we talking about? We're not talking about second-rate chief rabbis of the state of Israel, some of whom are going to sit in jail now. We're talking about Gedole Yisrael. So you see, now this also relates to Erev. If you're raised with the idea of Reshut HaRabim, you don't even know what a Reshut HaRabim is, and you're not familiar with Chazon Ish, and you're raised with that idea, you're putting up wires, shmayas, hey, you're going to disagree. You're going to disagree. Could very well be if you're of Hungarian stock or Polish stock, you are not bikiris to the second power. Okay, so I quoted the Mordechai. Mordechai doesn't win the case yet. So the Mordechai says, house to house. But then they quote the Chatam Seifa, Reb Moshe Seifa. Now this leads us, I'm just finishing up the second volume of the biography of Reb Aaron Cutler. So I have to tell you, I enjoy the pictures. It's people I knew from Lakewood. The text is far from honest, as I've said. I can show you time after time where they have Reb Aaron Cutler being a big machmir in Chalav Yisrael. They use breakstones in Lakewood in the 1940s. But okay, we have Eidut Nemana. People are still alive who can testify. Of course, well, if he set it down in front of the boys, Reb Moshe ate it, the Rav, I told you, everyone used Chalav Yisrael. Today, all right, you have Baruch Hashem. I remember when I came in Aliyah, the ice cream, you couldn't eat it. You cried for American ice cream. Today, you have an Israel ice cream, Chalav Yisrael. They export to America, going to Pomegranate. You'll see the power of things they bring in from Israel. It's beyond words what's available today. When I was growing up, Chalav Yisrael was always sour, rancid. It never reached the store in good condition. They didn't. Today, Chalav Yisrael, it tastes better than the regular Chalav. In some of the stores in Borough Park, the KRM market, it's cheaper. If you go, it's cheaper than ShopRite. You can buy a half gallon milk. Chalav Yisrael, cheaper than a half gallon in ShopRite. All right, I'm not opposed, but to say someone who eats Chalav Yisrael as a Hershey bar is not a good Chas v'Chalila. But you see, certain Gedolei Yisrael, I heard this, and so many topics, the Rav Baron Kotler spoke exactly the same. Over the years in my Shayurim, I'm an absolute echo of the Rav Baron Kotler. And there's certain Gedolei, there's a tshuva, interesting, he quotes the tshuva I always used to quote from the Chazon Ish. Remember the Chazon Ish had the Yehuda brothers. The second brother just died recently. They're no longer alive. I knew both of them. Tzvi Yehuda. So the Yehuda brothers were brilliant individuals, brilliant or not.
Brilliant.
And they were Talmidim of Chazon Ish. But they broadened. And Tzvi Yehuda, in particular, went to university, and they broadened. So he
used to teach comparative religion.
Right now, beside the... He lived in America. His brother came back from America. They were in America for many years. Where I taught many members of the family on both sides. Baruch Hashem, wonderful people. So he wrote an article on the Girsaot. You know, the whole problem that we have a proper text of the Talmud, variant readings, all that goes with it. Those of you involved in scientific Jewish scholarship, Chachmat Yisrael, those of you who have gone to Bernard Revel, studied with Professor Elman today, or those of you from my year who studied with Professor Avram Weiss, know what I'm talking about. So you talk about variant readings. So it seems that in the article, Professor Yehuda mentions the Gaon, and like he didn't have proper diffidence for the Gaon. The Chazon Ish writes to his Talmud, he cuts his head off Yomo, and he says, the Vilna Gaon, you write to him with such a cold fashion, The Vilna Gaon was a throwback to the Rishonim. The Ribbono Shel Olam in every generation gives us an example of what a Rishon was like. And the Gaon, his Kedusha, his Tara, his learning, his knowledge. And Rav Aaron Kotla, exactly the same vort, and he extends it to the Chatam Sofer. And I've often said, you take, for instance, Rav Moshe's tshuva, even the Rav to a certain degree when he had to deal with halacha. So you know the Litvisha don't give you encyclopedic knowledge. They have a different approach. They're not like Rav Avadja Yosef. They're not like the Minchat Yitzchak on Ungarische Pose. They have a different approach. They work with the Gemara, the Rishonim, and very rarely go into Achronim. But even Rav Moshe has to be mitchashev with the Chatam Sofer. Rav Moshe Sofer, and all the Hungarians bow to the Chatam Sofer, min Moshe, rat Moshe, lo kum kum Moshe, and they accepted him. Now, if this is the case, they quote the tshuva, and this tshuva is quoted by the Flatbush Rabbanim, it's quoted by Rav Menashe Klein in later years when everyone is attacking him. It's from the Chatam Sofer, Chelek Orechayim, Tshuva Tzadi Tet. I have to say, to the best of my knowledge, we don't have an edited edition of the Chatam Sofer either. You know what an edited edition would mean? To identify everyone he wrote to, the names, whatever we have, to place it in years, to place it in context. See, we need people with encyclopedic knowledge who have their hands on Shas and Paiskim, who can do something like this. It's hard. It's not easy to find someone who could handle this. But it's not a bad goal if anyone sitting here has dreams of doing a doctorate that will live on and live on. So Tshuvat Sadi Tet, he's writing to a Talmud of his, and he says, you asked me about putting up a Nerev. Are we allowed to put up a Nerev? Are we allowed to put up these wires? What are the sources? And he writes back to him, I'm quoting the Chatam Sofer, Dovazeh Einu Tzarich Lifnim Ularaya, Vohu Min Chaseichu Min Amavuha Lechedja Bidivrei Chazal. And he says, this doesn't need any great learning, doesn't need any great proofs. This is something that any Jew who learns Mesechet Shabbat, Mesechet Dei Ruvin, anyone who has his pulse on Chazal, Rafi Glickman, will know that you have to have an Erev. And he says, carrying is one of the worst sins possible. It's one of the Lamed Tet Melachot. And it's okay, we're used to it already, except you should have it ring hatikva, not stam, a goyish ring, or you ain't nothing but a hound dog, either hatikva, or you ain't nothing but a hound dog. Oh, you don't know what you did to me, you made me 60 years younger with that hound dog business. Ah, wow, I have a very unique wedding this Tuesday. The father of the bride was my Talmud for the first time exactly 50 years ago. 50 years ago. And say that they're sending a kaf meter, whatever. I was at his wedding, and I'm going to be at his final child's wedding. And I'm curious to see if these kids raised in Israel, they're English speakers, but they were raised here, if they too will have those songs and the second part. I'm curious to see if they have that, if they know. I know some of my grandsons know nothing, and some know more than I do, the Beatles. You can give Perushim on it, a Rashi, a Tosfot, etc., etc. Interesting. Anyway, coming back here, here he writes, it's unbelievable, he says, common sense, Haseichel HaPashut, will tell you you have to have an Erev. He says, how do you watch little children they shouldn't carry? What about women? How do you tell them not to carry? What about people who don't understand that this is one of the 39 Avot Melacha? And everyone has to carry keys and handkerchief. This is the Chatam Sofer talking 130 years ago, let's say, 115, 120 years ago. It's like describing a Jew today. keys, a handkerchief, and little kids walk out with bread in their hands. And how much heartache we will have on Shabbos when you have to go to shul and you have to take your siddur and your talit. And therefore he says, everyone has to have an Erev, every community. What a description. Talis, siddur. In America, what do you have? Everyone gets a siddur and shul, right? Everyone gets a talit. In Israel, most shuls, you can get a siddur. You can't get a talit, you understand? Here you have to have an Erev, if not for the siddur, at least for the talit. And then he quotes the famous Gemara. Now here you're going to see a chapa, and oh, it is. These words are like prophetic. It's describing the world today. Obama and German, the minister of health in Israel, the enlightened people against the people of darkness like Rakefet. It's unbelievable how much insight the Chatam Sofer said. And he quotes the Gemara in Eruvim that we've spoken about 100 times over, Daf Chafalef, that when Shlomo HaMelech, Daf Chafalef, I'm in bed, Omer Rav Yidon Shmo B'Shah Shetikon Shlomo Eruvim Etil Ejadayim, Yotza Batko V'Yomra, B'ni, Yim Chacham Libcha, Yismach Libi, Gamani, V'Yomer, Chacham B'ni, V'Samach Libi, V'Ashiva Kerpi Dava. How God rejoiced when Shlomo HaMelech introduced the takana of Eruvin, that you can build an Erev, the whole concept that Shlomo HaMelech introduced. So the Chatam Sofer asks a very simple question. Tosfos asks it, gives a different answer. Chatam Sofer gives an unbelievable answer. Yes, that's not the only takana that Shlomo HaMelech introduced. Didn't he introduce Shniyot La'arayot? In other words, according to the Torah, let's say you're only forbidden to take a limited amount of men or women or relatives, an aunt, an uncle, etc. By the way, an uncle can marry a niece, but the vice versa is forbidden. And Chazal added on a few other relatives to keep a fence around the Torah. Look into the Rambam, Hilchat Yisuri B, you'll see what I'm talking about. So how come the Gemara doesn't mention that takana? Why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu rejoice? Why don't the people rejoice? Why don't the people clap hands and dance with joy? Here, Shlomo HaMelech is doing so many wonderful takanot. Why not Shniyat La'arayot? And the Chatam Sofer answers an answer from the year 2015. When it comes to a Eruvin, the people rejoice. It makes Sabbath observance so much more beautiful, makes you so much more happy, enables you to rejoice, to take the children out, to visit people, to carry keys, to carry a handkerchief, to carry a siddur, to carry a talit, to carry food in your pocket. Chas v'chalila, yid zol nishgein hundrik, a Jew shouldn't go hungry. But araya, the people were crying, the more sex the better, the more deviant behavior the better. Yetzo leiv adam raminu rav. The United States of America says no belief in God anymore, no belief in Bible, no belief in going to church. It's beyond words. Homosexuality, same-sex marriages, it defies human imagination. Wow, that's the Chatam Sofer. Unbelievable. I'm not finished yet with the Chatam Sofer, but just for intellectual honesty, Taisvis asked this question on Daf Chafalef Amid Bet, but he gives a very simple answer. No drash, he just says that the Takana of Arayot came after this, because this is a bat kol that went out at the moment he made the takana of Erev, smach b'ni. But Arayot was years later, there was no bat kol. All right, that's Tosfos' answer. But Tosfos is daf chafalef amid bet ne'erivim divrei amatkel b'sha'an shetikein Shlomo Erivim. And Rekefet loves the Chatam Sofer's answer. That's Dashanut Homiletics, but wow, he is right on. Excuse me?
It's a Rashi in Baloshchav that they were crying Pesach Ha'ayel.
Right. Bachul Olehim. Rashi is quoting the Gemara. Right. Exactly. When they heard the Araya, Bachul Olehim. God, it hurts. Just think of this. I can't even talk about it. Rabbi Klein, the scandals. If a kid remains from today, you got to give him a Yashikayach. He has to see. He has to learn Rakefet's 6 words. By the way, those people who you saw me with that night, they repeated my 6 words to me. They said that's what keeps them alive. They're from the shul in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Okay? Judaism is perfect. Jews are not. And Yitzchak and I learned that from our teacher, Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. Now, what? From Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson, the Mashgiach, but there's Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. Yeah, but it hurts. When you see Rabbanim acting like that, it hurts. I was in the Five Towns in the summer, and I was caught up in that shul, the scandal, and that's someone I know intimately. I knew his father-in-law. I mean, his father-in-law and I talked back-to-back. It hurts. But I'm going to give a talk perhaps in Florida in January. How do we know we can trust the rabbi? And I'm going to make certain proposals there, how my people should be listening, and something should come out of it. But let's come back here. Now, there's another factor, and the Chatam Sofer here. In order to do all this, so, Dov, you have to understand, you need permission from the government. You can't put up an Erev, you have to be Seicher Rishut. To put up the wires, the telephone, to use telephone wires, to electric wires, to add. You know, the wires have to go on top of the poles. So many times you'll see, and Yitzchak, in what I Xerox for him, you'll see pictures of it. They put on posts on the poles so that the wires should cross over the post. For all that, you need governmental permission. And you fellas know what's going on in America, what went on in Cleveland, the original battle in Cleveland. There's actually a book written where that battle, a Jew versus Jew, by Samuel Friedman, if my memory is correct, Jew versus Jew. And that battle went on. And then in New Jersey, what community there was?
Tenafly.
Tremendous battle. Now in West Hampton, in the Hamptons, I was in the Hamptons, I'll never forget. I was there a number of times, my Talmud. At one time I had 3 Talmudim there. All 3 Rabbanim were my Talmudim. So when I got to the community, my Talmudim pulled me apart. I wound up saying at the end of my 4 or 5 days there that there are 3 rabbis here. One is Reform, one is Conservative, one is Orthodox. Each one was, they were laughing, but it fits their general outlook. They're all Shomer Mitzvot, but one was more lenient, one lenient. So a balabas comes over to me who's not a small balabas. This is a guy that's given YU over the years over $100 million at least. Could be it's more today. So he came over to me after, and he gave me the nicest compliment ever gave in my life, but that's not important. Then he says to me, why don't you talk with your Talmud? And he says, we must have an Erev here. And he says, tell him I give you a check to give him tomorrow when I can write for $50,000 to start the Erev campaign to build the proper Erev. So I go to my Talmud, Rabbi Mark, and I say, Mark, look at me. He says, that's not the problem. The problem is my president is opposed. His president at that time, there's a different president that I use in favor. I said, why should your president be opposed? So he told me they're worried stiff that if we build an Erev, we're going to get the Lawrence crowd into the Hamptons, and we won't be able to drive on Shabbos. That's what he said. Oh my gosh. I said, I went back and I told the other person who's very well known. He was very well known, the Board of Trustees, YU, a real heavyweight, a real from Joe. But the problems we have had. Now imagine when you have a local ruler. So here you can see the Jew in exile. The Chatam Sofer says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Hashem Natan Belev Malachim Uskaneim Besarim, Hashem Am Hashem Chosim Betzilam, Shenotnim Rishut Lishmar Datenu Beklal Ubefrat Likpoer Evurim B'mavotechem. And he goes on, we have to be so thankful. The rulers allow us to build an Erev. And even where the king lives, even where royalty lives, they allow us to build an Erev on their property. You know, they owned everything, the streets, etc., because they want to help the Jews observe their religion. And evidently where this Talmud lived, he needed the permission of the local bishop. And the Chatam Sofer writes to him with the word bishop, Ha'adon ha'gadol he'chassid, ha'bishop, I am positive, yitain reshut lahasiya mikshol v'takala u'b'chasto yarim hodo v'kisei kvodo, that he's confident the bishop will give permission, you'll be able to build the Erev, and it will enhance your rabbinate. So you see, with that introduction and with those two sources, who can argue with the desire to build, to construct a Erev in Flatbush? And you know, that you'll see, you'll understand the whole babble, but I just want to quote from here now. Those who wish to be machmir and follow the more restrictive point of view should not be disdainful of those who do use the Erev. Similarly, those who wish to be makil and rely on the more lenient point of view should refrain from criticizing those who do not make use of the Erev. Unfortunately, our Jews today do not know this. And if you would have read some of the Haredi press the last few weeks, my grandchildren get angry at me. Why do you read that garbage? Why do you read that trash? I once a week, the Friday editions, I see Yediot, I see Mariv, Yateid Ne'eman, and the Haredi Press. And I tell my grandchildren, I have to know what's going on in this country. I live here, I suffer here, my blood is here. We've played with blood, as you know, Zalopashut. Thank God my grandson is doing much better, but the trauma and those of his friends who didn't come back and kids that I know who are lo aleinu in the Olam HaEmet, for what, for when, I mean, it's just beyond words what we go through. And I got to know what's going on. The Haredi press, the hatred for the Jew who sumach on the het ha-mechira, and that the OU should pick that up in Jewish action, an absolute disgrace. Ribbono shel Olam, you got to buy an etrog, so you're going to buy a metro gray soaked in Jewish blood in Morocco, and who knows where it's coming from? Be samach on that the mechira. What are we talking about? And it's Sukkot. It's the holiday of the land of Israel and the economy of Israel. And that everyone should suddenly take on a chumrah. All right, someone who doesn't sell their chametz and spills out two good bottles of scotch, I can understand for him. I'm not going to say a word. But a general rule in Jewish action, la'an hitadanu, this is where we're at today. Wow, it hurts. Yes.
Wasn't the issue about taking Kedushat Shvi out of Eretz Yisrael? Were they attacking the Het HaMechira?
No. If you're not Samach on the Het HaMechira, and let's say the Etrogim have Kedusha Tshvit, not allowed to take it out of Eretz Yisrael. That's what they're attacking. So you can't buy it. But if you have the Het HaMechira, it doesn't have Kedusha Tshvit. And even if you take it out of Eretz Yisrael, that is a whole machlekes ha-paiskim. If it's already out of Eretz Yisrael, you may not have to return it. Zman habir, etc., etc. Then there's another easy solution, which we use in Israel. If you pay with a credit card, So the kedusha remains in the pri. It's not nitfas in the kesef. A credit card is not kesef. A check is not kesef. So then you have to be makpid to eat the pri bekedusha. But it's according to the Ramban, it's a mitzvah to eat the perot shvi'ah. Do you follow? It's eaten bekedusha. But if you're samach on that mechira, then there's no kedusha whatsoever. Otze beitin, there is kedusha. The problem with otze beitin is twofold. One, it doesn't solve the problem of vegetables. After a few weeks into the year, at that point already, there's a problem of svichim. You follow whatever was harvested before Rosh Hashanah, there's no problem of svichim. But anything harvested in the year of Shvius has a din of svichim. See, that's a problem. It's different than fruit. Svichim, because people would fake around, they us it all together. So we don't solve it that way. The other problem with Otze Beistin is the stores are few and far between. And for instance, I make a cheshbon, I can't start driving to Hanov, to one store that my daughter goes to, lives two blocks away, that I'm going to buy all my fruits and vegetables there. I don't have that time, I don't have the heartache, I don't have the effort, don't have the energy, don't have the strength. And ich will nicht mevatel sein from Torah. It's not that I'm spending my time whistling, you know, I'm doing other things. So that's a second problem, a secondary problem. And there's a whole machloket, by the way, now, if you're following in Yateg Neman, was Rav Kook in favor lachatchila of the Heta Mechira or Otze Beitin? A whole machloket of Talmidim of Rav Kook. But here, they paskim alacha, don't be samach on Heta Mechira, don't buy the etrogim. Wow. Now, the article goes on, I don't want to repeat, it's everything we spoke about last week, that you have to, we're putting up the Erev, it's a Tzirat HaPetach. In addition, we're renting from the city the right that this now belongs to us for the purpose of Shabbos. Everything belongs to us, and the Gentiles who live there, and the non, and the Jews who are Mechalel Shabbos, do not interfere with our desire to have one big chatzer, one big area. And then, of course, you need the matzah. They describe again a box of matzahs, what's used. I told you, if you go to the Moritzah Datit, you can see the matzah in a glass case. And every Erev Pesach, they change the matzah, they make a bracha, and they declare with this Erev, it would be permitted to carry from the houses to the courtyards and the streets and vice versa, from street to street within this community, for us and for all those who come into this area for this and for future Shabbatot. Then the guidelines. And see, here already you're getting involved. Are these problems real? Yes or no? Number one, they're reminding people, even though we're going to have an Erev, you can't use an umbrella on Shabbat. Now, the umbrella is a problem of binyan. And it's interesting, we're machmir, because it's not black and white. It's a binyan arai. And what about if you open the umbrella before Shabbat? Logically speaking, if the umbrella is open before Shabbat, you should be able to use it. But the Achram already discussed that if you open it, people see with the umbrella, no one's going to know you opened it before Shabbat. Could be we can have a solution in Israel to have a sign on the umbrella, HaMitriya HaZot Niftacha Kodem HaShabbat. It was opened before Shabbat.
Oh,
then how would you store it? It's a problem, but we don't use an umbrella on Shabbat. I have now good rain clothes. I actually have gear that I can walk in the worst rain and not get a drop on me. I have rain pants, you know, that you, I don't want to go into details. The first rain pants I bought in the rabbinate, because I write about it in Washington. I was walking to Shul Shabbos and a car stops and a Jew offers me a lift, says, Rabbi, I'm going past the shul. And then I saw when Rabbi Teitz's biography came out by his daughter, my good friend, Dr. Rivka Blau, she writes the same thing with her father, that her father comes to Elizabeth, and when he was first there, a car stops, Rabbi, I can give you a lift to the shul, it's raining. So then, if you bought fisherman's pants, it was heavy. Today I have pants that are very light, you don't feel it on the heart, you don't feel anything. In addition, I have a raincoat I bought in Williamsburg. The problem is in Williamsburg, if you go in the raining, there are 1,000 coats that look the same. So I put my name on it, and my wife had to make the hood a little smaller because it was built for a strimal. But with that raincoat, with boots and rain pants, let it rain, let it rain, let it rain. Nothing can disturb you. But the Yitzchak, yeah, what did you want to say?
Don't we have an opinion that you don't make zeros in our time?
Yeah, Yitzchak, I can't. Rabbi Rubin is claiming we don't make Gezerah. He's quoting me. He's quoting the Encyclopedia Talmudit Gezerah. He's quoting the Rishonim. He's quoting already. Everything is correct. What can I do? The world is no hate not to use an umbrella Shabbos. So I can't bring myself to use an umbrella, even if I open it up before. I'll leave it in the living room open. I have a big, big umbrella in the house. Oh, wow. The Rav said that in Yerushalayim, when he was there, he heard that there were some of the Chachmei Yisrael from the Hebrew University, they opened an umbrella before Shabbos, and they used it on Shabbos. And the Rav laughed. He said, yes, it's a machlekes. He didn't condemn them, but he said it's a machlekes. But that's one problem. Then there's the second problem, and I'm being very factual here. It's a wonderful pamphlet. And at Bididi Havayov, that happened to me. I was in North Miami Beach, and the Rav in the shul there is a very edel of Rav, Rabbi Shapiro. He's a Talmud from Lakewood. His grandfather was a famous Talmud from Reitz, from where you're getting smicha or got smicha. He was a Talmud of Rabbi Revel, and the years move on. Then there's the father in the rabbinate and the grandson, Lakewood boy. And he actually, when his father died, he was a candidate for the shtela, and they wouldn't take him. They took someone from this kollel instead. It was a bad mistake because they wanted a YU guy with a whole machlokes. And he wound up in North Miami Beach. He succeeded Rabbi George Finkelstein. When Rabbi Finkelstein went on Aliyah, he took the shtela. So one time I'm in North Miami Beach for Shabbos, and they're very good, sincere people. And he comes to shul, and he's in tears, and he's hysterical. Walking to shul, the kids were playing baseball or basketball, and it was mamish sweating and no trace of Shabbos in the air. And of course, this brings us to the problem. One should have an era of what's wrong with playing ball, what's wrong with bouncing a ball, what's wrong with shooting for a basket. And of course, it takes away the whole spirit of Shabbat. It's like these guys out on the coast who came up with a new system where they can send messages on Shabbat with a grumma switch. So there's no Issa D'Oraita, it's only an Issa D'Rabbanan, and they're in tents. Well, it's the end of Shabbat. I mean, if kids, teenage kids, are going to be taught this is the way you play games, you understand? How far can you be matu with a grumma switch? In Israel, we're noig with a grumma switch only when it's a question of health. In other words, a doctor, a jeep on patrol. I told you, there's some areas where there haven't been terrorist attacks in many years, but they still patrol on Shabbos. So they have jeeps with grumma switches. It's a terrific thing. My son-in-law was one of when the army at one point bought thousands upon thousands of Shabbos telephones for high-ranking officers in the army. So my son-in-law told me every time once a month or so, it goes back years, he would be the officer in charge of the whole base. It would rotate, I think, up to the rank of, I think he was a major. I think when he went up further, he didn't have to do it anymore. But when he was a major, so he would always take this telephone with him, because if he had to get on the telephone, he had a grumma switch, and sometimes it was pikuach nefesh, sometimes it wasn't. But it's very important. That's wonderful. These cars for people who are invalids and can't walk and can get the shul with a little scooter, a buggy they call it, with a grumma switch, kol hakavod. But to let every Tom, Dick, and Harry use a grumma switch, where is Shabbos left? So the Rabbi Shapiro, I'll never forget, got up and cried and pleaded with the children, Shabbos is Shabbos, even though there's a Nerev, even though you should carry, but it's not a time to engage in sports. And this, by the way, is an ongoing problem. What do you do with kids on a long Shabbos afternoon? It's a problem. Not every kid. I was a kid. I never was a kid. I was always learning and learning and learning. I was a kid. I told you. I have affinity for Balichev, and I can't say I came from a home and environment that was totally Shomer Shabbos. But I'm not a Balichev. It was a different world. I can give you names. Every last American kid in my time, outside of the sons of rabbis, some of the most famous gedolim today, we all came from the same type of environment. But let it be said, from the age of 11, 12 on, I had three goals. I told you, I had three goals in life: to be a gon, a tzaddik, and to be a malamed. And I became a gon, and I became a tzaddik, but at least I became a malamed, Baruch Hashem. But a normal kid, you know, you can't say to him, sit and learn all the time. How do you work out a nice Shabbos environment? All right, this is Bnei Akiva, this is Ezra, this is Ariel in Israel. You have many, many groups, but it's a challenge. But here they asa, Shabbat is a holy day on which our major efforts ought to be directed towards spiritual goals. Then entertainment. I mean, this is something that I can't even imagine. Imagine a kid buys a ticket in advance. He goes to the movies on Shabbos. Goes to a sporting event on Shabbos. Now here I have to tell you, at all the Frumkite in Brooklyn, get hold of an old-timer who grew up in Crown Heights. And you ask him about Friday afternoon in Ebbets Field, how many times he and his friends were Mokabel Shabbos in Ebbets Field. The game went overtime. It should have ended 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. All right. Today, Tzaddikim, that's why Ebbets Field is not there anymore. Gone. Ebbets Field, you know how far it was from Chabad? Maybe 2.5 blocks. Anyone a native Brooklyner? It's Mamish around the corner. One big corner around the corner from Chabad was Ebbets Field. So you see, you got to tell, these activities are not appropriate. It's forbidden. What about the library? It is prohibited to check books in and out of the library on Shabbat. Mail. Are you allowed to mail a letter on Shabbat? Absolutely not. Even though there's an Erev, but this is Muksa. I can tell you here an interesting story. This is in parentheses, taking you back in the history of Torah. We spoke about it last year, 2 years ago, perhaps, in the Monday class. But Teachers Institute of YU, which doesn't exist anymore, it always attracted a less religious student, generally, than the yeshiva proper. There were reasons why. Many of these kids wanted to go to Columbia, wanted to go to a general college. The parents wanted them to go to a yeshiva. So they made a compromise on Teachers Institute where the courses were not... You have a version of it today in the yeshiva, the Beis Medrash program. Am I right, Rabbi Goldwick's program, where you have less hours of Talmud? Am I right, Jomo? Am I right that this exists today? No, will someone tell me if I'm right or wrong? Why are you graduates? Isn't there a program that has less hours of Talmud?
Yes.
Three programs. Baruch Hashem. So in my days, there was Teachers Institute. So yeah. Dean Zah said, once told the class, he was teaching us Tanakh in college, he once said, some of these kids are Machalos Shabbos and totally ignorant. We said, what do you mean? He says, they write letters on Shabbos, and then they go to mail them. So I meet this kid mailing a letter on Shabbos. So Dean Zah says to him, you can't do that on Shabbos. It's carrying. You know, there was no Erev in Manhattan. So the kid says, oh, I forgot. Then Dean Zah says to him, when did you write the letter? And the kid double talks him. So Dean Zah understood. Not only was he mailing the letter on Shabbos, but he wrote it on Shabbos. One may not mail letters. Gardening, watering the lawn, other garden activities prohibited. Muktzah, anything which is muktzah may not be carried. What about gifts on Shabbos? Oh, this is an old problem. What about you're invited to Kiddush and you're into someone's home for Sudat Shabbat? So I'll tell you, halacha l'maisa, whenever I'm invited anywhere and I'm bringing a gift on Shabbos, I always have my wife give me the gift, whatever it is. I lift it in the air, I walk Dalet Amud, I make a kinyan for them. But you should know, if it's food that they can use on Shabbos, then there's no problem, because it's not just the gift. You're bringing for the suda, you're putting down a bottle that people will soon drink. So they warn the people, gifts may not be given on Shabbos. But however, one may give a gift to be used on Shabbos itself. The gift must therefore be something which is usable. One is able to open it. One is able to use it. And finally, they go into, all right, that's an interesting question. But halacha l'maisa, people do give gifts on Shabbos, and if you want to solve all problems, make a kinyan before Shabbos. If you're bringing food, you're bringing cake, you're bringing ice cream, you're bringing liquor, then me'ika hadin, there's no problem. Just put it down and say it's for the suda, and let the host and hostess decide what to do with it. And finally, on the part on infants and young children, so here they speak about what is their worry here, that if we allow people to carry on Shabbos, to wheel carriages, to take children out of the house, it will create havoc in the shul. And here they quote the Magen Avraham, they quote the Mishnah Brura, and this is a very delicate question. How do you balance out children? You want children to come to shul. My son-in-law, who was in the army so many years and still is in Israel in security, and he's president of the shul, and he's the candy man. He's the candy man. And I see all these little kids come up to him, and he says, Matamo, maybe, you know, a little kid should learn Todah. A kid who's older should make a bracha. He's the candy man. And what do you do about kids in shul? So in this particular shul, there's no problem because there's a courtyard outside the shul. It's a one-family house in Rehov Palmach, a block away from the Shtiblach. It's owned by the city. It's a senior citizens' place with activities for seniors to gimla'im all week. Shabbos, Yontif, Cholamayit, it turns into a shul. But there's a large courtyard, so the kids can run out and make all the noise they want. In Australia, in Melbourne, I don't have a powerful voice, and Shabbos you can't use a microphone. And here I am, the kids are making such a ruckus outside the shul. And the president, Danny Lamb, said to me, we're the only shul in Australia that has a problem, Baruch Hashem, of kids making noise. So you see, it's a delicate problem. You don't want kids not to come, but how do you... So I'll tell you, halacha l'maisa, probably the best thing to do is for children who are already 3, 4, have them, someone tell a story, give them candy. A kid should associate the shul with sweetness. That is so important. A shul should be to him Simchas Torah. He has enough time in life to learn about Yom Kippur. Follow me? So we have to find a solution. But the problem is a problem.
Okay. The issue of feeding pets and animals on Shabbos, does it depend upon the neighbor?
Well, you can't feed pets. You couldn't carry food outside of the shul. But pets and animals are different shayla. You can only feed those that are yours, that belong to you, that you're responsible for. And yet, Minig Yisrael goes against it one Shabbos a year, Shabbat Shira. People where there's an Erev, people will carry and feed the birds and the Shira, because the birds sing. Not so simple that Minig Yisrael overtook a rabbinic prohibition. You follow?
So even if there's an Erev, you can't feed animals?
No, you can only feed your own. But you can't feed those that you're not responsible for. You can't feed. But I don't know. If you're going to raise an issue that if I don't feed them, these animals would die, you have to look into the see if it's discussed by Achronim. You follow? The issue may have come up already.
So it becomes a much more complicated issue.
Yeah, but if there's an Erev, at least it's easy. It solves the problem of carrying. You understand? Okay. But on that topic, there was a Rav who lived in, when I came in Aliyah, I lived up the block from me, Rav Efrati, was a survivor of Shimon Efrati. His son is very big in Kashrut of the Agudat Yisrael world, right? That's his son. So he wrote 2 books on the Holocaust, Gei HaHariga, and he tells one story that's overwhelming. Look at who we are and who the Goyim are. And he describes this Hasidic Jew. He comes from Hasidic stock, Rav Efrati. It may be Gerach Hasidim, if my memory is correct. And this Jew is being taken away to be sent to the concentration camp. And he's yelling to a Jew who wasn't selected, remember to feed the animals. We can't eat until they are fed. And that's what was on his mind while he's being taken away. God have mercy on us. This is who we are. And this is why the world can take such advantage of us. But not anymore, not anymore. Baruch Hashem, we have the state of Israel today. Tzvag and Ali Israel and all that goes with it. Despite our politicians and despite the arguing public, if you followed what happened a week ago, it's beyond disgrace. And the head of the Shabak is with a big kippah. He's 100% frum. And he's arguing in public. I don't know. I would have told him, go learn Mesilat Yesharim and you'll be a better head of the Shabak. But you have to know, is you getting married, so you don't know all that went on. That was, you were fatumult, if you know a little Yiddish. If you don't know it, ask Elvis Presley to teach you what the word means. But the Rav used to say, you remember about his Zayd, the Rebellion Pujana, when Rebellion sat down to eat, it was a big taharam, asawi, what went on? He checked right away, before he ate breakfast, were all the cats fed? Were the geese fed? They had sheep in their backyard, they could face cows, in their, whatever they had. All the animals had to be fed first. Then Rebellion Feinstein, Rebellion Pujana, sat down to eat breakfast. These are Jews.
Imagine feeding
the
cats around here.
Feeding the cats, Baruch Hashem. The cats of Yerushalayim. But you know why the cats were brought here, because there were rats. There were mice, rats, and Baruch Hashem, they brought in the cats and they did the job. Now, let me go one step further. The Machloket engendered such enmity that it's beyond words. There's a website called Erev Online. And I'm quoting to you from something that happened, something that was published, but I lived it, I knew about it, December 11th, 2011. That Friday night, this was Sunday, December 11th, 2011, they're publishing this little article. That Friday night, a terrible tragedy happened in Williamsburg. A Jew named Reb Elimelech Weiss was killed when a car hit him. This Reb Elimelech was a very highly regarded individual, did chesed, and he was responsible for the Erev that they put up in Williamsburg. A Chassidish Jew. Do you know that Paskvilas went up? Paskvilas, I think it has to be pronounced. I was corrected, but let me pronounce it. If I'm pronouncing it properly, Paskvilas went up, posters. That you know why he was killed? Because he built an Erev, and he was a Mechalel Shabbos Berpachesia, and a Mechalel Shabbos is chayav a death penalty. Now, could you imagine putting up these placards while the family is first sitting shiva? But there's more to the story. When the police came and found the body, they had no idea who this person was. What do you carry on Shabbos that will identify you? Friday night, what do you carry? He had keys. Through the keys, they identified the person. Evidently, the keys might have had a name on it, a number, an address, or they were able to go to the shop that made the keys, and the shopkeeper recognized the keys. In fact, it was to his benefit that he was using the Erev, since he was identified by the keys he was carrying. Then, there's something very interesting also posted December 1st, 2011, and this already is right about the Brooklyn Erev and Rav Moshe Shita. And you can check it out. I don't want to go into all the details. There was an article in Bamishpacha, and it turns out that there was a medical doctor. He was not alive at this point already. Dr. Leon Ehrenpress. His wife's name, Ahava. That's the name that comes through. Ahava. It's the name that's written here. It says, could be it's Ahuva, but it's written A-H-A-V-A. Ahava. I don't know if anyone's named Ahava. Maybe it's Ahuva, but it's printed here, Ahava. So what is Reb Moshe Shita? Reb Moshe Shita is that Williamsburg, that Brooklyn is more than 12 mil by 12 mil. And for the sake of popularity, define it 12 miles by 12 miles. Maybe a mil is more than a mile. And within this 12 mil by 12 mil, you have 600,000 people out on the streets. Now, this Aaron Press, medical doctor, what was his sport? He ran. A lot of people run. I know in my shul, Friday morning we get a bigger minion than usual, and we're a very early minion. And you should ask right away, why is Friday morning people don't go to work? Why do you get a bigger minion? Because we have people who run in marathons, run in races, young people, old people. And they come to shul already. You can see from the shirts they're wearing, it's marathon. Some marathon they won a prize in, some marathon they participated in, from Jews. It's a sport. This Aaron Prince ran. And when he ran, he would have a gizmo attached to him. What's the name? There must be a technical name for it that tells you how many miles you're running.
Okay.
What's it called?
Pedometer.
A pedometer. Pedometer. Okay. A pedometer. All right. Baruch Hashem, you have on your iPhone, you're in a different world. Kanayin Hara. This gentleman doesn't know how he's alive. You understand? If you'll ask him during World War II where he was, and he has children in the finest divisions of the Israeli Defense Forces today. So that's my friend who I only know since 1962 when I came to Maplewood, South Orange, to build the first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County. He's one of the few frum Jews in Newark proper. So we know each other going back to 62. Okay? Herbie Maltz, he today goes Chaim, Herbie Maltz. So this Dr. Aaron Price says, what? This is Brooklyn, and he says he's running, and he measures how far he's running, and it gets involved in a whole debate, how big is Brooklyn? Then there's another question. 600,000 people, he and his wife go to Ocean Parkway, she tells the story, and they clock the cars going by on Ocean Parkway. And by the time they're finished clocking and working it out and how many cars and how many people, they say, we influenced Reb Moshe, and that's why he was so machmir, and that's why he considered Brooklyn a Reshut HaRab in the Oraita. So after the article appeared in Bamishpacha, there were people who came out and totally disagreed. They said Brooklyn is smaller than 12 by 12. It's not just 12 miles by 12 miles, but a mil is much more than a mile. And if you go 12 by 12 at Machne Yisrael, we spoke about this months ago, you wind up taking in Lower Manhattan, you wind up going beyond Brooklyn, you wind up in part of Queens. But not only that, who says there's 600,000 people on the street? Those cars that you counted are going back and forth. So you're counting cars that really, it's one half the total of what you're counting, because it's the same car going back and forth. By the way, many achronim, this is Rabbi Asher Klein, just reminding you, so what if a car is going? The cars are a Reshut HaRabim. It's not counted. A car is a Reshut HaYachid, excuse me. It has a mechitza. It's more than 10 tefachim. None of us drive cars. I think even a convertible, if you add up the convertible, it's more than 40 inches high, where the door is, right or wrong. A door? Yes, of course. Even a convertible. It's a Reshut HaYachid. It has a wall around it. How can you count the car? Not only that, Reb Moshe claims he was told that a million people come in to Brooklyn every day to work. A million people. Do you know that people called up the city, got hold of the Department of City Planning, got hold of their literature, and the city says the amount of people coming in to Brooklyn every day is approximately 235,000. So 235,000 is not 600,000. And even if you take the Brooklynites who are on the street, very hard to conceive that at one moment in time, 600,000 people are on the street. So you see, this machloket, Reb Moshe, what is the Rishut HaRabim, what isn't the Rishut HaRabim, this machloket will live on and on. It is nothing new. It is ongoing. It is to a certain degree insoluble. The Rambam Shita, Tetzayin Amot, and the advice that the Flatbush people gave when they built the Erev, those who wish to be Machmir can be Machmir, like the Chafetz Chaim says, but those who wish to be Mekil have every right to be Mekil. Those that are Machmir should not desecrate those who are lenient, and those that are lenient shouldn't have the attitude, they're Machmir, and I don't want to use the word everyone used, they're chnucks, you know, it's they use the word, they're black, they're this, they're that. I once had right here in the Kollel a student years ago who went with a long beard and pais, chassidish kid, about tshuva, and terrific ability in outreach. And someone in the yeshiva administration from New York dismissed him because he looks too black. And I was so offended. I said to him, this fella has a soul, has a heart. He's terrific. Yeah, but this is rakefet. Again, I repeat, and if you know what's going on in the Torah world today, there is so much to be saddened about, so much machloket, what's going on in Litvishe Welt, in Panovich, in the Hasidische Welt, in Bava 45 and Bava 48, Satma 1, Satma 2, etc., etc., etc. It is frightening, and the illness is very simple. If you go with the viewpoint, I'm right and everyone else is wrong, it's the end of Yiddishkeit. If you go with the viewpoint, I've learned Shas and Paiskim, and difference of opinion is the heart of being a thinking, unique, divine being created in the image of God. We all have minds of our own. Baruch Hashem. I have my opinion. There are other opinions. Chazal is filled on every page with various opinions, and Beit Hillel Beit Shammah live with each other, b'shalom, b'shava, b'hashkeit, u'v'vetach. That's my approach. Unfortunately, that's the approach I got from my Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Unfortunately, out in the streets, many of you are told, this is Teres Hashem, and any deviation is not correct. To my humble way of thinking, that's the antithesis of B'tzalem Elokim, Nivra Ha'adam. Okay, where have we come to? Next week, you won't believe the document I have in front of me, the inner workings of what went wrong in Flatbush, and it's, again, you'll see an insoluble problem. This document was written as a paper for me for graduate school credit by a student in this kollel 19 years ago, almost 20 years. It'll be 20 years this May. I wonder if he still has the document. He was involved, his father was involved. Then we have the New York Times. Then we come back to our friend Reb Menashe. And then we come into Kabbalistic incantations dealing with the Erev. And then we reach London. And Yitzchak, you said you're going to London shortly?
Yes, so I spoke.
What's up? Why are you going to London? Touring?
Yes, so the Joy. Upper Arch area, Hyde Park,
right.
Right. There is
a right. That's where the big machlokes is, and you'll see why I'm going to deal with it. It's a different machloket altogether. Okay. If
why can't they have a solution? They do neighborhoods. You don't have to do the whole city.
No, they did do neighborhoods, but the machloket is within Gold is Green and Hendon. You're not late. When I walked into the monk shul in Gold is Green, because Rabbi Monk was once the rabbi there, there was a sign up that if you're Samach on the Erev, you cannot be a member, cannot have an aliyah in the shul. There was a sign in the...
They don't throw you out.
No, they let you daven. They didn't throw you out. Very nice. You can't be a member, and you look down upon as Machalal Shabbos, and Eichel Nevelkin Trefet, the Boro Bila Tasurit, and everything that goes with it. Please, so you say, it can be. They let you daven. It's nice of them that they let you daven. Zayah Shane, very nice. My dear students, I wouldn't miss tomorrow's lecture. For all the rice in China and all the honey that was sold before Rosh Hashanah in the state of Israel. Tomorrow is this building, this campus, and the documents. Did Rakefet do well to publish them, or is it disgraceful that he published them? I don't know. I'll let you decide. I can't decide. I'm prejudiced, but the truth has to be told. To my dear student, Michael Miller, a gift that will make him very happy. Baseball's best decade, the 1960s. When you were growing up, I get the best books and I have to pass them on. Anyone who wants the latest Jewish action has wonderful articles, except for one line that gave the Rebbe heartache. But not only me, I'm happy to tell you, a lot of other people got upset. By the way, no one is to leave. We're davening Marv in exactly 2 minutes. If anyone wants charts for Yerushalayim Lichbenching, when we light, when Shabbos is over, Mo'etza Hadatit, they put in my mailbox 2 minutes. A new blog, practical halachic discussions. Here's the first discussion. Inviting the departed to a wedding.
Oh, God, love that.
Here you are. Rabbi Yisachar Friend, a Talmud tried to sell me that why do you have all these scandals that even if someone is a tzaddik, the Satan goes after him after he does tzidkut as well. So here you have on two Parshiot, on Parshat Chayesara, I have it twice if anyone wants, very fascinating. And finally, a very interesting article from the forewords, why do we keep dismissing Chabad spirituality? In other words, the subtitle is Chabad outreach is getting something right. Very interesting article. Finally, a very sad announcement, and this should be checked out. If this is true, it is unbelievably shocking. Hanhalat McDonald's, I'll say it in English, the owners of McDonald's have announced that their branches in Israel do not support IDF and do not give discounts to soldiers like the other branches of similar stores. They don't recognize Jewish sovereignty in Jerusalem, in Ramat HaGolan, in Yehuda V'Shomron, and $1 out of each order you eat in McDonald's is given to Palestinian organizations.
So why don't you close them down?
Now, McDonald's is owned by someone who went out of his way to open a Chilul Shabbos restaurant in Jerusalem. His hatred for Yiddishkeit and Zionism, it's a real meretznik of the old Shoma Hatzair. He owns it. Today there are kosher McDonald's, but if this is correct, it's forbidden to eat in any McDonald's. But I got this in an email from my daughter, and if anyone can check this out, this is shocking.
How do you check it out?
Ask around if anyone else knows this. It's made the rounds. It's circulating. Oh, my God.
It could
God.
Be a total lie.
I doubt it, because I know who owns it. Tamid saneti otam v'yat kol ma shehem yaktsim. Achshav ani roe eiza schut yesh kli shav pam kaf ragli lo darcha al miftanam. So this is McDonald's. My daughter passed this on to me. I don't know. I'm asking if anyone else sees it.
How many units do they have in Israel?
They're all over the country. They're the biggest chain.
Was straight and then became kosher.
Yeah, many have become kosher for business reasons, but the one in the center of Jerusalem on principle remains treif. My dear students, I want to thank you very much for coming and participating and joining. And does anyone have a chiyuv for Mariv? If we don't have a chiyuv, then Herbie, lead us, please. Ephraim, come, please, quickly. Someone, Michael, go ahead. Until we meet again in health and happiness.